A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one about customs licensing. He's been thinking about what it actually takes to clear your own goods through customs instead of always going through a freight forwarder. The core question is pretty practical. If you're importing a shipment from China and you want to handle the receiving end yourself, clearing customs, doing last mile delivery from the port, do you need a customs broker license to do that? And if so, what does getting licensed actually look like in different countries, including here in Israel? He's also wondering whether the licensing process is such a gauntlet that it just doesn't make business sense for most people to bother.
This is one of those questions where the answer is genuinely different depending on which country you're standing in, and the difference actually tells you something about each country's philosophy toward trade. Let's start with the United States, because it's the clearest example of the "you cannot do this yourself" model.
The walled garden approach.
In the U.S., customs brokerage is a federally regulated profession under U.S. Customs and Border Protection. If you want to file entry documents on behalf of anyone else, including your own business, if it's a formal entry, you need to be a licensed customs broker. The governing statute is 19 U.S.C. Section 1641. To become one, you have to pass the customs broker license examination, which CBP administers twice a year, usually in April and October.
Twice a year. So if you fail, you're waiting 6 months to try again.
The pass rate is brutal. Historically, it hovers around 15-30%. The exam is 80 multiple choice questions, 4.5 hours, and it covers everything from tariff classification to valuation to country of origin marking rules to drawback and bonds and intellectual property enforcement at the border. You also need to pass a background check, including a fingerprint-based FBI criminal history check, and you have to be a U.S. citizen or a lawful permanent resident. No green card, no license.
That citizenship requirement is interesting. It's the government saying customs clearance touches national security enough that they want to filter who gets to do it.
It's not just about security. It's also about liability. A licensed broker has to maintain a continuous customs bond and is personally liable for any errors that result in underpayment of duties. CBP can suspend or revoke a license. There's real teeth here. Which brings us to the practical answer for most people. If you're importing something into the U.S., you hire a broker. The license exam is hard. The continuing education requirements kicked in a few years ago, and the liability exposure isn't worth it for occasional shipments.
In the U.S., the answer to, can I clear my own goods, is basically no, unless you want to make customs brokerage your actual profession.
Now, flip to the other side of the spectrum. In the U.K., individuals can clear their own goods through customs without a license for personal imports. HMRC allows self-representation. You register for an Economic Operator Registration and Identification Number, an EORI number, and you file your own customs declarations through the Customs Declaration Service. For commercial imports, it gets more complicated. You might need to be authorized as a customs agent or use a simplified declaration procedure, but the door is open in a way it simply isn't in the U.S.
The U.K. is more of a, here's the paperwork, good luck, model.
Which brings me to Israel. Israel sits somewhere in between, and the system here is a bit of an onion.
Layers. And it makes you cry.
In Israel, customs brokerage is regulated by the Israel Tax Authority under the Ministry of Finance. The Customs Ordinance and the Customs Brokers Law of 1964 govern who can represent importers before customs. To act as a customs broker, what's called a mochus in Hebrew, you need to be licensed by the Israel Tax Authority. Here's where it gets specific. To qualify for the Israeli Customs Broker License Exam, you need to be at least 25 years old, an Israeli citizen or permanent resident, and you need to have completed at least 12 years of schooling plus either a relevant academic degree or 3 years of practical experience working under a licensed customs broker. The exam itself covers customs law, tariff classification, valuation, rules of origin, free trade agreements. Israel has a bunch of those, and practical procedures. It's administered in Hebrew, and the pass rate isn't published widely, but people in the industry will tell you it's not a walk in the park.
25 years old minimum. That's an interesting age gate. Most professional licensing is 21 or 18.
The thinking, as I understand it, is that customs work involves enough financial and legal exposure that they want people with some life experience. But here's the key distinction for the question we're discussing. An individual can clear personal imports through Israeli customs without a broker's license. If you're bringing in goods for personal use, not for commercial resale, you can represent yourself.
Personal use is doing a lot of work in that sentence.
The Israel Tax Authority defines personal imports as goods intended for the importer's own use and not for trade or business. There are value thresholds. Above certain amounts, even personal imports trigger more scrutiny. And if you're importing commercially, meaning goods intended for resale or use in a business, you need a licensed customs broker. There's no self-representation option for commercial entries.
If Daniel's hypothetical is someone importing furniture from China for their own home, that's personal. They can handle it themselves. But if they're importing furniture to sell, they need a broker.
And that personal versus commercial distinction exists in a lot of countries, but the thresholds and enforcement vary wildly. Some countries look at the value, some look at the nature and quantity of the goods, some look at both. Israel is a both jurisdiction.
There's also a practical dimension here that I think gets glossed over in the licensing conversation. Even in countries where you can self-clear, the customs declaration process is not exactly user-friendly.
Oh, it's Byzantine. Let's talk about what actually goes into a customs entry. You're filing a declaration that includes the harmonized system code for every item, the HS code, which is a 10-digit number in most countries that classifies the product for tariff purposes. You need to declare the customs value, which isn't just the invoice price, it's the transaction value plus freight, insurance, and any other costs up to the port of entry. You need to declare the country of origin, because that determines whether preferential tariff rates apply under free trade agreements. You need to calculate the applicable duties, VAT, and any excise taxes. You need to submit supporting documents, commercial invoice, bill of lading or airway bill, packing list, certificates of origin if you're claiming preferences, and potentially import licenses or permits depending on the product category.
If you get any of that wrong,
best case, your goods sit at the port, accumulating demurrage and storage charges. Worst case, you're looking at penalties, seizure, or an audit that opens up your entire import history. Customs authorities have very long memories and very broad powers.
Demurrage is one of those words that sounds boring until you're paying it. Then it sounds like a fire alarm.
Demurrage is the fee the shipping line charges when you hold their container beyond the free time, usually 3 to 5 days after discharge. Storage is what the terminal charges. These fees compound fast. I've seen cases where a small importer trying to save a few $100s on a broker ended up paying thousands in port charges because they couldn't get the paperwork right.
The licensing barrier is only half the story. The other half is the operational knowledge. You can be legally allowed to do something and still be practically unequipped.
This is where the freight forwarder's value proposition really lives. A good forwarder doesn't just consolidate cargo and book space on vessels, they navigate the regulatory interface. They know which forms go where, they know the specific requirements of the port of entry, they have relationships with customs officers, and they carry errors and omissions insurance so that when something goes wrong, you're not personally on the hook.
Let's go back to the licensing process itself. You mentioned the U.S. exam has a 15 to 30% pass rate. What's the actual content like? What kind of question makes it so hard?
Let me give you a flavor. A typical question might present a scenario. An importer brings in ceramic mugs from Portugal with a unit value of $4.50 each. The mugs are packed in gift boxes with a value of 75 cents per box. Shipping costs from Lisbon to Newark were $2,000 for a container holding 10,000 mugs. Insurance was $150. What is the correct entered value? And then you get four options that are all plausible but differ by small margins. You have to know the valuation rules, what counts as assists, what's included in transaction value, and how to apportion freight.
You're doing this under time pressure with 80 questions.
4.5 hours, so a little over 3 minutes per question. But some questions take much longer to work through. The classification questions are their own special circle of difficulty. You might get a description like a handheld device that records audio, plays MP3 files, and has a built-in FM radio receiver, and you have to choose between four HS codes that differ by one or two digits, each with different duty rates. And you have to understand the general rules of interpretation, the section notes, the chapter notes. It's not trivia, it's applied legal reasoning.
The musical equivalent of beige wallpaper, but with financial consequences.
That's actually a perfect description of tariff classification work. It's deeply tedious until it's suddenly very expensive.
The Israeli exam, is it comparable in difficulty?
From what I understand, talking to people in the industry here, the Israeli exam is less formally grueling than the US one in terms of exam length, but makes up for it in linguistic and regulatory complexity. Israel's customs law incorporates elements of the old British Mandate ordinances, Ottoman-era provisions that still have residual effect, and modern Israeli tax law. There are also specific complexities around kosher certification imports, standards, institute requirements for certain product categories, and the fact that Israel has free trade agreements with the US, the EU, Mercosur, and several other blocs, each with its own rules of origin requirements.
The free trade agreement patchwork is its own hidden curriculum. Every agreement has different origin rules, different documentation requirements, and different phase-out schedules for tariffs.
If you claim preferential treatment under an FTA and you get audited and can't substantiate the origin, customs will backbill you for the difference plus penalties and interest. This is not theoretical. Customs authorities globally have gotten much more aggressive about origin verification in the last decade.
There's an undercurrent in the question about whether it makes business sense to get licensed. I want to push on that. Even if the exam is hard, couldn't someone in a small importing business decide it's worth it to bring that capability in-house?
It depends on volume. The rule of thumb in the industry is that if you're filing fewer than, say, 200 entries a year, the cost of maintaining a license and the associated systems and training doesn't pencil out compared to paying a broker. A licensed broker in the US has to complete continuing education, 36 hours every 3 years under the current framework. They have to maintain their triennial status report with CBP. They need to stay current on regulatory changes, and there are a lot of those. CBP issues rulings, Federal Register notices, and trade alerts constantly. The harmonized tariff schedule gets updated every year. Free trade agreements get renegotiated. Anti-dumping and countervailing duty orders get issued and reviewed.
It's a subscription service to a regulatory fire hose.
The software isn't cheap either. To file entries electronically in the US, you need to be connected to the Automated Commercial Environment, ACE, through approved software. In Israel, customs filings go through the Shar Olami system, WorldGate, which is the electronic customs platform. You can technically access it as an individual for personal imports, but for commercial entries, you need the broker interface and digital certification that individuals generally can't get.
There's a technological gatekeeping layer on top of the legal one.
Even if you pass the exam and get the license, you can't just log into a website and start filing. You need the software, the digital certificate, the bond, the power of attorney framework if you're representing clients. Or if you're representing your own company, you still need to establish that relationship formally in the system.
Let's talk about the power of attorney angle. In the US, a customs broker operates under a power of attorney from the importer. What's actually happening legally there?
The power of attorney, or POA, is the document that authorizes the broker to act as the importer's agent before CBP. It's required under 19 CFR 141.32. The POA has to be in a specific format. It has to be signed by the importer or a corporate officer, and it typically grants the broker authority to make entry, endorse bills of lading, sign documents, and handle funds on the importer's behalf for customs purposes. Without a valid POA on file, the broker can't clear the goods.
If you're doing it yourself as an individual, you're essentially acting as your own agent. No POA needed because you're the principal.
But the moment you step into commercial territory, even for your own company, the regulatory framework treats you differently. In the US, a corporate officer can make entry on behalf of their own corporation without a broker's license, but only for certain types of entries and only if they're a bona fide employee of the company, not a contractor. That's the corporate compliance exception in 19 CFR 141.1. But it's narrow, and many companies still use brokers even when they could technically self-file because the liability risk is too high.
The employee exemption exists, but it's the customs equivalent of driving without a seatbelt. Legal in some situations, but why would you?
Here's another wrinkle. In many countries, including Israel, the concept of the declarant is broader than just the licensed broker. Under the World Customs Organization's SA fee framework and various national implementations, the importer of record is always ultimately responsible for the accuracy of the declaration, even if a broker prepares it. You can outsource the paperwork, but you cannot outsource the liability.
That's the part I think a lot of small importers don't fully absorb. They think hiring a broker means the broker is responsible if something goes wrong. But customs law almost everywhere says the importer of record bears ultimate liability. The broker has professional obligations and can be sanctioned, but the duties, the penalties, the interest, that's on the importer.
Which creates this interesting dynamic where the broker is your agent, but also has obligations to the government that can conflict with your interests. A broker who knowingly submits a false declaration can lose their license. So when you tell your broker, just classify it under the lower rate, they have every incentive to push back.
The broker as a reluctant compliance officer. You're paying them to represent you, but they're also the government's first line of defense.
That's exactly the dual role, and it's by design. Customs authorities don't have the resources to audit every entry, so they deputize the brokerage industry as gatekeepers. The licensing regime is how they ensure the gatekeepers are competent and accountable.
Let's circle back to the practical scenario. Someone wants to import a container from China. They've arranged shipping through a freight forwarder on the China side. The goods are arriving at the port of Ashdod or Haifa, and they want to handle customs clearance and last-mile delivery themselves. Walk me through what that actually looks like in Israel.
The vessel arrives. The shipping line or their agent issues an arrival notice to the consignee. That's the person or company named on the bill of lading. Before you can touch the cargo, you need to clear customs. If it's a personal import, say furniture for your own home, you can self-clear. You log into Shar Olami, you file your import declaration with the HS codes, the value, the origin, you attach your documents, and you pay the duties and VAT online. Once the declaration is processed and released, you get a customs release order. Then you go to the port terminal, present the release, pay any port charges, and arrange transport.
That sounds almost straightforward when you say it quickly.
The words are straightforward. The execution is where it gets textured. Let's say one of your HS codes triggers a Standards Institute requirement. Many products do in Israel. Now you need an approval from the Standards Institution of Israel before customs will release the goods. Or let's say your shipment gets flagged for a physical inspection. Now you need to coordinate with customs to be present or have a representative present when they open the container. If the inspection finds a discrepancy, you're now in a dialogue with customs about classification or valuation, and that dialogue is conducted in Hebrew during business hours with officials who are not in a hurry.
Your container is sitting at the port the whole time, quietly accumulating charges.
Ashdod Port's demurrage and storage fees are not subtle. For a standard 20-foot container, you're looking at free time of maybe 4 or 5 days after discharge, then charges that escalate the longer it sits. After 2 weeks, you're paying real money. After a month, you're questioning your life choices.
The hidden cost of DIY customs clearance is the cost of your mistakes measured in port storage fees.
The time you spend learning the system, fixing errors, driving to the port, waiting in offices. A good customs broker clears dozens of entries a day. They know the inspectors, they know which HS codes get flagged, they know which supporting documents to have ready before customs asks for them. That tacit knowledge is the real barrier to entry, not just the license, but the operational fluency.
The license is the permission slip. The fluency is the actual product.
Fluency in Israeli customs work includes understanding the unique complexities. Israel has a purchase tax on certain goods. It has different VAT rates and exemptions. It has special rules for imports from the Palestinian Authority areas. It has security-related inspection protocols that can be triggered by the origin country or the nature of the goods or just random selection. A broker navigates all of that as muscle memory.
Let's broaden the lens. Are there countries where the DIY approach is viable for commercial imports?
Singapore is an interesting case. Singapore Customs allows self-filing through TradeNet, their single-window platform. The system is designed to be accessible. You need a SingPass and you need to register as a declaring agent, but the barrier is much lower than the US or Israeli model. Singapore processes something like 99% of declarations electronically within 10 minutes. The system is built for speed and accessibility because Singapore's entire economic model depends on trade facilitation.
Singapore is the counterexample. A country that decided the friction of licensing was a competitive disadvantage and engineered around it.
They can do that because they're a city-state with a single port of entry, a unified government, and a culture of process efficiency. A country like the US has over 300 ports of entry, each with its own nuances, and a federal system where trade enforcement priorities shift with every administration.
The US customs broker exam is also a reflection of a particular philosophy, that customs work is a profession like law or accounting, not a clerical function.
That's actually a debate within the industry. There are voices arguing that the US broker licensing model is outdated, that it creates an unnecessary bottleneck that raises costs for small importers. Others argue that given the national security dimensions of customs enforcement, preventing counterfeits, enforcing sanctions, interdicting forced labor goods, you want a licensed professional class with skin in the game.
Where do you fall?
I see both sides. The licensing regime does add cost and complexity, but I've also seen what happens when unqualified people try to navigate customs. The error rate goes up, the enforcement burden on customs goes up, and eventually either the goods don't clear or the government collects less revenue than it should. There's a reason most developed countries have some form of broker licensing.
It's the classic professional licensing tension. The public interest in competence versus the public interest in access and affordability. Customs just adds a national security layer that, say, hairdressing licenses don't have.
Though I will say, having watched a few customs audits, there are days when the stakes feel comparable to a bad haircut.
The difference is, you can grow out a bad haircut. You can't grow out a customs penalty.
The other angle worth exploring is the trend toward digital customs. The idea that technology can simplify the process enough to reduce the need for specialized intermediaries. The World Customs Organization has been pushing the concept of the single window for years. One electronic portal where traders submit all import and export documentation once, and the system distributes it to all relevant agencies.
How's that going?
It depends on the country. Singapore's TradeNet is the gold standard and has been operating since 1989. South Korea's UNI Pass is very advanced. In Africa, countries like Kenya and Ghana have made real progress with single-window systems. The EU is rolling out a new customs pre-arrival security and safety system called ICS2 that centralizes data submission across member states. But implementation is uneven. Many countries have a single window in theory, but not in practice. The portal exists, but you still need to deal with multiple agencies offline.
The digital transformation is real, but it's not eliminating the need for expertise. It's just changing what the expertise needs to cover.
In some ways, it's making the broker's role more valuable, not less. When the routine data entry is automated, the broker's value shifts to the non-routine, the classification judgment calls, the valuation disputes, the compliance strategy. The broker becomes more of an advisor and less of a form filler, which means the licensing exam in the future might need to test judgment and analysis more than procedural knowledge.
The US exam already does that to some extent with the scenario-based questions, but I take your point. The trend line is toward higher-level skills.
There's one more thing I want to mention about the Israeli context specifically. Israel has a relatively small customs brokerage industry. The number of licensed brokers is in the low hundreds. It's a concentrated profession, and many of the brokers are older. People who've been doing this for decades. There's a succession problem. Younger people aren't entering the field at the same rate, partly because the licensing barrier is high and partly because the work isn't glamorous.
Customs brokerage as a dying art. That's a concerning thought for a country that imports a significant portion of its consumer goods.
It's not dying yet, but the pipeline is thin. The Israel Tax Authority has been exploring ways to modernize the licensing process and make it more accessible, but progress is slow. Bureaucratic reform usually is.
The practical advice for someone sitting in Israel right now, wondering whether to get licensed or DIY their imports, what's the bottom line?
For personal imports, DIY is viable if you're willing to learn the Shirolami system and you're importing straightforward goods that don't trigger regulatory requirements beyond basic customs. Furniture, clothing, books, things without health, safety, or standards, complications. For anything commercial, or anything that requires permits, or anything where the value is high enough that a classification error would be painful, use a broker. The license isn't worth the effort unless you plan to make customs work a significant part of your business.
For the determined DIYer who wants to at least understand the process, even if they use a broker, what should they learn?
Learn HS classification. It's the skeleton key to customs. If you understand how the harmonized system works, the structure of chapters and headings and subheadings, the general rules of interpretation, the section and chapter notes, you can at least have an intelligent conversation with your broker and catch obvious errors. Most importers can't even read their own customs entries. That's a vulnerability.
The HS code as a life skill. I like that.
It's fascinating once you get into it. The harmonized system is a universal language for trade. Every country uses it, and the first 6 digits are globally harmonized. The fact that a porcelain figurine and a tractor part can be precisely located in the same classification framework is a quiet marvel of international coordination.
The Dewey Decimal System of Global Commerce.
And just as underappreciated.
One last thing I want to nail down. The question mentions handling last mile delivery from the port. That part doesn't require a license at all, right?
No license needed for trucking from the port. But you do need to coordinate with the port's gate system, which often requires pre-registration and appointments. In Israel, the ports use an electronic gate management system. You can't just show up with a truck, you need to book a time slot, and those slots can be scarce during peak periods. Also, if you're picking up a full container, you need a chassis and a truck rated for the weight, and the shipping line wants their container back within a specified window, or you pay detention charges, which is different from demurrage, a distinction that has driven many an importer to despair.
Demurrage is the container sitting full at the port. Detention is you keeping the empty container too long after unloading.
And the clock on detention starts the moment the container leaves the terminal. For a 40-foot container, free time for detention might be 5 to 7 days. After that, daily charges apply, and they're not trivial.
Even the unlicensed part of the process has its own labyrinth of fees and deadlines.
The entire logistics chain is a series of clocks ticking simultaneously, each with its own free period and its own escalating fee schedule. Mastering customs clearance is just one clock among many.
The importer as a timekeeper in a game where the rules are written in fine print, in multiple languages, by people who don't care if you lose.
That's the poetry of international trade.
All right, so to summarize, in most countries with developed customs systems, you need a license to clear commercial goods. The US makes it especially hard with a brutal exam and citizenship requirement. Israel requires a license for commercial imports, but allows self-clearance for personal goods. The exam in Israel requires practical experience or a relevant degree, minimum age 25, and it's administered in Hebrew. The operational knowledge gap is often a bigger barrier than the legal one. Even where you can self-clear, the learning curve is steep and the cost of errors is high. And whether you use a broker or not, understanding HS classification is the single most valuable skill you can develop.
If you're determined to go DIY, start with a small, simple shipment. Don't make your first self-cleared import a full container of regulated goods arriving during peak season. That's how horror stories happen.
The voice of experience. Speaking through the voice of someone who's heard the horror stories.
I've heard a few, yes. And they all start with, how hard could it be? And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1963, the president of Honduras was inaugurated in a ceremony where, by long-standing tradition, the outgoing president's chair was ritually turned to face the wall before the new president entered the room. A practice meant to symbolically prevent the departing leader from casting influence over the incoming administration.
It's a furniture-based separation of powers.
I appreciate the psychological warfare of chair turning. Very cost-effective.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps more people find the show. We're back next week with another one.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.